The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardim. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal.
Welcome in to the show, my good friends. Saturday night. Tracy Chapman, that is such a beautiful piece of music indeed. It is, just to tee up our first guest. His name is George Genericus. He's an analyst with Canaccord. Covers some of the hottest names out there. Global leader, I'd say. Tesla. Also covers Generac. Interesting space. Tesla just came out with their quarterly results. I reported them on air yesterday. My little micro radio work I do on a daily basis. And stellar revenue. Just under $25 billion in Teslas sold. And so, you know, it took time, what, about 10 years or so? At which point, here we are today, driving up the Don Valley Parkway a couple weeks ago. In each of the lanes beside me and in front of me were Teslas. I saw three Teslas all side by side. Yeah, it's here to stay. So, George, going through the Morgan Stanley report on Tesla, they had a few key takeaways, and one that really caught my surprise, that Tesla is also a AI theme, you know, quite prominently discussed on the analyst call. So I want you to talk about their AI involvement. The Cybertruck, anticipating it to hit the market. They just, I think, announced recently that they're just beginning production of the first vehicle. So please share with us the latest on Tesla.
Yeah, so thanks for having me on, everyone. Yeah, we've been talking about this Tesla AI angle for a while. So I think that we've been ahead of the curve and we're getting our research taken from other places, so I'll give Canaccord a little pat on the back there.
No, good for you.
So with regard to Tesla and what they said on the call and the AI angle, look, the AI angle here is related to autonomous driving. And what the company has done over the last few quarters and is still impacting results is that they've decided to surrender near-term profitability for the sake of long-term profitability by seeding the market with units and by basically prioritizing units over profits in the near term. They're putting more vehicles on the road with the hopes that those vehicles will eventually be penetrated with autonomous vehicle software. That's a $15,000 upgrade. And in order to enable autonomous vehicle software, which is literally getting better day by day, you have to build this AI infrastructure. You have to take in data from the road, analyze it, train your system. And that requires a lot of compute. And Tesla is one of the leading companies in the world in making autonomous vehicles happen. So by putting these vehicles on the road, they have a razor blade model that will eventually, we think, result in much higher profits over time. They're also deciding to spend money in the near term on things like robotics and also battery technology. Tesla is vertically integrated, right? So they're doing all the way up to autonomous vehicle software and AI and all the way down to, you know, mining and refining materials. So this is literally the definition of vertical integration. And they've been doing this for some time.
Let's talk about the joint ventures that Tesla has and is engaged with. I was recently in the beautiful country of Portugal. I cannot overstate how beautiful the people of Portugal are. It's such a lovely country. But it's funny, when I travel in Europe, I often see some of the coolest cars that you just don't see so readily here in North America. Fleets of Mercedes-Benz electric vehicles, the ES5, ES3 as well. And I was told by the owner that the construction of that product very much was a JV with Tesla. So this notion of open source sharing, with global partners seems to be taking place, but then you throw China into the equation and there's always that, you know, wall of worry. Are we giving away too much? Where is this road going to take us? So again, on a both macro level and a company level, can you please speak to that, George?
Look, the JVs you might be referring to are the open sources. Very recently, Tesla decided to open up its charging infrastructure, and other companies have decided to use something called the NACS adapter from Tesla, which means that their cars will eventually be able, their EVs will be able to leverage the Tesla supercharger network, which is significantly more ubiquitous than other public chargers. And by the way, much, much, much more reliable, right? So just by changing that adapter or in the EVs, you can leverage that network. Now, what Tesla has going for it and what Rivian has going for it, and I don't think traditional auto OEMs have going for them, is that they built these vehicles from the ground up. And that means that you basically, for the most part, for a lot of these upstart EV companies, built software at a systems level, i.e. the braking software, the motor software. These are all developed in-house. So what? Who cares? Like, what does that mean practically? Well,
yeah.
It means that if you have an over-the-air update, that'll literally change the look and feel and performance of your vehicle. Many years ago in 2018, Consumer Reports downgraded the Tesla Model 3 and said the brakes aren't working well, so therefore we can't recommend this vehicle for consumers. And so what Tesla did is, okay, we'll be right back. We're going to update the brakes over the air. And it was a rabid debate on CNBC and other industry rags. There's no way Tesla can upgrade its vehicles over the air. Well, they did. And all the naysayers were proven wrong. And the reason why they were able to do that is because not only do they have the software, did they create and code the software that controls the entire vehicle, almost like the operating system, but also the systems that control the individual systems in the vehicle. Rivian's done the same thing. And very recently, Ford CEO, there's a really interesting interview that he did, said, look, I'm buying software from about 100 different suppliers, and it's really tough to integrate this stuff. So if you want to go fix the brakes for your Ford, the same way Tesla did over the air, you have to go to the dealer.
Ah.
That's a major difference between starting from the ground up and working with a clean sheet of paper. And when we think about the next, call it 10 years, of the way the EV market's going to work out, we're of the strong opinion that it's going to look a lot like the handset market did, i.e., the traditional vendors that come from Europe and the U.S., i.e., like, remember the Nokias, Motorolas, Ericssons of the world? Well, they're going to kind of, sort of, for all intents and purposes, lose market share in a big way. And the companies that will emerge and dominate are upstarts, like Apple at the time, like Tesla and Rivian, and Chinese companies. And the world will likely be dominated by a combination of U.S. and Chinese EV companies.
Let me ask you about that question. How good are the Chinese at producing electric vehicles? We're seeing better adoption rates in China in the EV market. And I'm hearing and reading a lot that they really do understand EV manufacturing. Can you validate that?
So I was a little bit skeptical about Chinese EVs. I got to ride in a couple over the last year, and they're really, really great.
Mm-hmm.
I was so impressed with the look and feel and the build quality. They're starting to penetrate Europe. It'll be interesting to see if they ever penetrate the U.S. for obvious reasons, but I was really impressed with it. We don't cover these stocks, right? But just from a consumer perspective, just stepping in them and getting a good feel for them, they were really great. And it's hard to be skeptical that they'll figure this out over the long term.
You know, there's so much to talk about, this whole notion of open source as well, so that everyone can participate in the programming, is really what built Microsoft and its leg up. And you recently just heard a joint venture between Google and Meta that they are going to work, I guess, on their AI chat work collectively. I don't know, it's, again, you're just seeing these big global partnerships take place. And, you know, the incumbent, you know, opening themselves up to potential competition, of course, causes people every now and then to raise their eyebrows. But the world is flat, my good friends. The show is Hi-Fi Radio. We're on with a brilliant analyst, George Yannarakis. Of course, Jack Hartle, my partner, by my side. Lots to talk about with George, but we've got to pay some bills around here. Terrestrial radio lives, my good friend. It's all about money, my good friends. Please stay tuned. Turn up your radio. We'll be right back.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
Welcome back to the show, my good friends. It's about money. George Yannarakis is on the line with us. He's an analyst with Canaccord. He covers Tesla, Rivian, Generac, Wolfspeed, Fluence. Very much in the electrification space. Did you know that Apple is now a $3 trillion company, and that one company is worth more than all of the stocks that trade on the Toronto Stock Exchange? The entire TSX is worth less than Apple. Did you hear what I think? That's incredible. Jack, Mr. Cook, excuse me, Mr. Jobs, Steve left Jobs. He left us in 2011. And time does fly. You and I both guessed it was 5 years ago. He's the man. He was the man. Elon Musk is the man. He was the man. And there was a lot of skepticism as to what and where the company would go from there. Because he saw that stock. He had that company down at $1 a share, $2 a share. He was down on the mat for a period of time, scrapping the PC market. And then all of a sudden, out comes this telephone, at which Motorola and Research Emotion were dominant players. He said, really? This is going to...
Well, that's the example that George has given us.
But so how much value has Apple appreciated since Steve left this planet?
Yeah, we looked at a chart, and when he passed away, it was around, a $500 billion company. So
it's now $3 trillion, so sixfold. Company up sixfold under the helm of Mr. Tim Cook.
But I will say that when Steve Jobs left, the driver of that business was already invented. So you had the iPhone had been launched, yep. And now basically they've taken that product and obviously continue to leverage it into the greatest consumer brand in the world right now anyways.
Indeed.
Maybe George has something to say about Tesla. Maybe they're a better brand, but for the time being, I think that the iPhone is the king.
Hey, you know what we did, George, by the way? We in our office, we're constantly thinking and outside the box and inside the box as well. But we said, let's use ChatGPT to tell us what it believes are the world's 100 top brands. And the reason I requested that is Jack and I believe in buying best in breed leaders, world brands, moats, and sustainability. That's how we build portfolios. And of course, then we rotate through that. But every stock we own, regardless of direction, the company itself is good. It's just a question of are they in favor or out of favor. And Tesla right now, of course, is hotter than hot. But I don't think Tesla made the Global 100, did it? It did not, Jack, make our Global 100 list yet as a brand. It will.
100%.
What do you think, George? All Jack and I just shared with you.
Look, you know, I think there's a lot of room for Tesla's brand recognition to grow globally. I mean, Apple is a global company,
yep.
With many hundreds of millions of devices sold.
2 billion installed users with Apple. 2 billion installed users. 100 billion phones and 1 billion laptops and PCs. It's huge. Huge installed base.
Obviously, a lot of room for Tesla to grow there. But the difference between... I think there's actually more brand recognition in Elon Musk than there is in Tesla.
What was his most recent tweet this week? What did he say that moved markets a little bit? He was up to something the last couple of days.
Well, he's been talking about the economy and how it's been a very challenging.
No. He was talking about the grid. He made a prediction, and George, you know this. He made a prediction about, I think, the grid basically being tapped out in a year and transforming stations requiring an upgrade within 2 years based on forecasted demand. Things moved around because we own a couple power stocks, Jack and I, George. We own Eaton and we own Qantas Systems. Are you familiar with both companies?
I don't know much about them, no, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're basically involved in creating the grid and electrification of the universe. So basically a bunch of hardware being wired up. Nonetheless, the stocks are working.
What would you say? So you say that Elon Musk is the brand. What do you think, George, of him as a businessman versus an inventor? Because like we said...
Good question.
You know, Tim Cook... Obviously, he's a great businessman. And they certainly put Apple in the right hands after Steve Jobs passed away. Yep. Would Tesla be better off run by more of a businessman as opposed to, I'm going to say, Elon Musk is really an inventor?
That's a good question.
I would say no. Look, he's obviously created or caused some agita on the part of investors over the last decade or so. But the proof's in the pudding. He's taken the company from nothing to something.
richest man in the world, so we'll start with that.
A lot more than something.
He's the richest man in the world, eh?
I
always
so.
Forget
it depends
that.
What the
is
price
that true,
of,
George?
It depends on the price of Tesla.
Yeah, of course, bro. Yeah. Wow.
He is, yeah. I mean, as of the last time I saw, yes, he was. And, he's obviously competing against NASA, and done something incredibly special with SpaceX. So, people just kind of discount him because of the way he tweets or the things that he says. But I would rather have no one else at the helm of Tesla than him.
I'm with you. Is the stock fully loaded in here? It looks, it's basically hitting up against price targets. It's ahead of Morgan Stanley's price target. Is there any more room for it in the short term? You think she's a little stretched and due for a bit of a pullback, George?
Look, the reality, our price target is 293. It's buy rate in stock. But the reality is on their conference call, just to kind of talk about what happened to stock style a little bit today.
No.
First of all, it had a huge run this year.
Massive.
I would say that, in discussions with investors yesterday, they were non-committal around the near-term direction of gross margins. And when companies hear things that are, or, I'm sorry, investors hear things that are non-committal, they tend to get a little nervous. And, he made it plain, very plain that the overall auto market is erratic, our word, not his. But he said something to the effect of one day, I think the world's ending based on the data we see. The other day, I think it's fine. So, the massive increase we've seen in interest rates over the last several months is obviously impacting the auto market, obviously impacting demand. And so in the face of those challenges, the companies decided to cut prices and feed the market with units like we talked about.
Yeah.
But, they made that plain, painfully clear on yesterday's call that these are the things that they're seeing in the marketplace. And we believe that they didn't want to necessarily commit to, a bottoming of gross margins to leave themselves room just in case the market got worse to cut prices again and continue to use that lever to push more units in the marketplace. So that's what I think the market's in. It's had a big run, and expectations were reasonably high, and I think that's what happened to the stock today.
So they left the door open for cutting prices in a soft economy, George. Can you talk about their pricing model? They already have cut prices. They're really competing. I think Ford actually came out on the F-150 and cut prices this week too. Can you maybe talk to, how the dealer network on a traditional automotive company prices their product versus Apple or versus Tesla?
Sure. Elon Musk has made this point in the past, so I'll take his words. Dealers cut prices all the time. You just don't know it because they're not transparent about it, right? If the market's very tight, you go ask for a discount to MSRP, you're not going to get it. And if the market's loose, and demand is not that great, then you'll get much better negotiating leverage when you walk into a dealership. So that's effectively how dealers cut prices on vehicles. The Tesla model is much more transparent. But what you see is what you get. You go to the website, you order your vehicle, you get the incentives from the Inflation Reduction Act if you're in the U.S., and that's that. So there's a lot more transparency. I think people like that. We'll talk about something that creates agita. You know, going to the dealership and negotiating a price if you want to buy a new car is not something I'd like to do. And so when you're buying a vehicle from Tesla, the price is the price. And so based on that transparency, they have to adjust prices in real time and with, you know, and visibly to investors and to the world. Traditional auto companies don't have to do that.
George, I want to pivot over. We got a couple minutes left. Another stock that we own is Generac. Friends, you know what Generac is. And if you don't, well, the backup generators. And if you drive around Toronto, you will see them beside several people's homes. As you know, the grid is getting older, and every now and then we get a power outage. If you have any kind of sump system on your house, highly recommend it to get yourself a Generac to back up that sump, because you don't want a flood in your house. It's I'll tell you an amazing story, George. I donated some of my personal Generac to Covenant House when it was $500 a share. And so the government gave, or Covenant House gave me a $500 per share. I gave them several shares, but they gave me a $500 per share donation slip, which I was then allowed to fully claim. And as such, basically half of that money came back to me, i.e. $250 from the $500 I gave back to me in my tax return. And the irony is I went and bought the stock back at $1.50. So my tax return was $250, and I went and bought Generac back. Actually, I think we paid about $140 for it recently. So the thing got crushed. It went from $500 down to $100. Looks like it's based and has turned the corner a wee bit. Supply chain was a big problem with Generac. COVID overselling the system or stocking the system. Then they couldn't get parts. Then inflation pushed their parts up, and they couldn't pass on to consumer yet. So where are we at now with Generac? In your opinion, has the trend turned back for the better? Because they are the world leader in backup generators.
Well, I think you've characterized the situation very well, and we think it has turned the corner. The company had a significant inventory issue, i.e., you know, demand was really, really good after COVID, and people, in our opinion, sort of double, triple ordering, and so they shipped all these generators into the channel. And suddenly supply got better, demand wasn't as good, and you had this major backup in the system. And they've been working through that now for a few quarters. And so we think that that the company's well through that process. Inventories are clearing in real time, and underlying demand remains good. And the best indicator for underlying demand are outages, which you can track every day on the Generac website. We do it every day.
Really, eh? The Generac website does that. That they're smart. I like that. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, it makes perfect sense.
Totally makes sense.
Who's going to buy a generator? Well, I just had my power out. Now I'm going to buy the generator.
Yeah, but I don't need to follow them. I don't need to follow their website. In fact, it won't show us the power's gone out. How can you go to their website and see if a power outage is coming? You got no power.
No, we track them across the United States.
Yeah, no, I understand. I'm just having fun. Yeah.
But the point is, Wolf, it's like you buy insurance after you already had the
right.
Accident,
that's
right.
Point.
That's the problem.
That's the problem. Yeah. But you want to do stuff like that in advance. It's a macro theme, my good friends. The world of EV is here to stay, and it is a secular, long trending. And as such, Jack and I intend on participating on the upside of these investment themes. George Enriquez, can't thank you enough for your intellect. Talking Tesla, talking Generac, and Fluence. Fascinating discussion. We're going to take a quick break and head over to Latin America, hang out with Jamie Carrasco. He's an advisor at Canaccord, very much focused on currency, gold, alternative assets. It's a lot of fun. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Welcome.
Welcome back, my good friends. Hi-Fi Radio, show about money. Yeah, it was Chrissy. She passed away from Fleetwood Mac, right? The singer beside.
I know the name too.
Oh, what's her name? Oh, I'm gone brain dead here. Work with me, people. Give me a call. Someone help me out here, would you?
Call a friend.
What is her name? Who sings for Fleetwood Mac? The lead singer, lead vocalist. What's her
I'll
name
get it for you.
No, the lead vocalist. Come on, you don't need to think. Help me out, Jack. The producer, you know?
Stevie Nicks.
Thank you. There you go. Stevie Nicks. And so,
that's what we call Jamie.
So singing beside Stevie, of course, the original vocalist for the band, because Stevie joined the band after. I think her name was Chrissy. Am I wrong?
Yes, you're right.
I'm right. Thank you, Jamie. Jamie Carrasco. We're going to have to get you in the studio to sit by my side when we're tuning up the tunes. Jamie is a portfolio.
Sure.
No, good for you. We got a great song lined up for you next. We got our Colombian friend that just came into town. He's got the next tune lined up. But what's the name of the next band?
Ray and Bobby Cruz.
What is it?
Richie Ray and Bobby Cruz.
Did he catch a Richie Ray and Bobby Cruz?
Cruz, yeah.
Cruz. Do you know that one, Jamie?
It's
Latin America from Colombia. Hey, you're going to like it. You're going to like it. It's got a little salsa feel
Chiquita.
To it. Chiquita. You'll love it. Indeed. Before we get into the market and all your talk about debasing, de-dollarization, Jamie, this is going to be fun, but some of you out there are going to really, really like it. Others are going to say, what is he talking about? I'm sort of in that camp. What is he talking about? But you know what matters, my good friends? The most important thing, if you want to be wealthy, you got to work. And you got to save consistently. I want to go through the math again before we get into the details of gold and silver and Bitcoin and crypto. $1,000 a month. I think everyone, you need to minimally try to hit $1,000 a month in savings. That's $250 a week. That's about, $35, $40 a day. Some people spend that at Starbucks alone. You must cut back if you need to save. And you need to start building wealth early. Let me go through the math with you. It's so important. If you just buy the broad stock market, the North American stock market, over 50 years, it tends to go up by about 9, 10%. Let's play with 9 on the conservative side. The S&P does about 11, by the way, and the Toronto market probably do about 9. So let's play with a 9 handle. It's an aggressive number, but if you own quality blue chip stocks and you stick with them for decades, this is sort of what you should expect as a return. And again, you can also expect, 35 to 50% drawdowns. Doesn't matter. You're in it for the long haul. You got to sign up for this. The sooner the better. $1,000 a month after 1 year, you'd have yourself about $12,800, and you put $12,000 in. Not that exciting. After 10 years, you put in $120,000, and your account would be worth $167,000. Not bad. So 10 years, you got $167,000, but it starts to get interesting. Just after 20 years, at 24 years, Jamie, do you know how much money you'd have at 24 years? After 10, you have $167,000. At 24 years, how much money do you think you'd have put aside? $1,000 a month, 9% rate of return. 24 years.
$2 million.
How much?
$2 million.
You're aggressive. $1 million. 31 years, Jamie, 31 years gets you to $2 million. And here's where it gets interesting. People, listen to what I'm about to say to you. 10 years, you got $167,000. At $1,000 a month, 9% rate of return done every month. 10 years, $167,000. 24 years, $1 million. So if you start at 40, 64, you should have $1 million. If you start at 20, you're 44 with $1 million. Huh. All right. At 31 years of doing it, you're at $2 million. How long, Jamie, do you think it takes you to get to $3 million? I'll answer it for you. It takes you 4 years. So it takes you 24 years to get to your first million. And then it can take you as little as 3 years, 4 years to get to the second million. Well, it goes 24 years to get to 1, 31 years to get to 2, 35 years to get to 3. And by the way, after 40 years, Jamie, you're at $4.6 million. So, friends, you want a retirement plan? It's as simple as this. You leave school at 25 and you save every single month $1,000, generate a 9% return. And on your own, I don't think you're going to do it. You need to hire people like Jack and I to get you to that 9%. Trust me on that, because most retail investors don't even come close to that number because they do the wrong thing at the wrong time all the time. How's that, Jack? Wrong thing, wrong time, all the time. It's so true, because they buy the front page. They don't.
They trade on their emotions as well.
Well, yeah, which is their emotions ends up being front page.
But the question for Jamie is, so 30 years, you said $3 million, 35 years, $3 million.
Yep.
In 35 years, Jamie, what is that dollar worth?
Oh. That's a good point.
35 years.
I'll tell you what the number is. It's about half. It'll be worth about half. Purchasing power will be about half. 35 years.
Not less.
Or if not less, it could be. But that's all the more important. You know, people again are thinking they can do this by buying GICs at 5%. Taxes and inflation. No, you're going to lose purchasing power. You need to make almost a double digit return. 9%, I think, is a reasonable number. Jack and I, we've compounded for clients in the last 20 years, just over 10%.
Yeah, net, I was going to say when we do run financial plans for clients, part of that process is when we build in what their lifestyle expectancy is.
Yeah.
What are they looking to spend in their retirement?
Yeah.
We also have to add inflation into that as well.
So, 100%.
You know, if you expect to spend $100,000
a year
in your first year of retirement,
yeah,
it's going to be meaningfully more in your 20th year of retirement.
It'll be over double.
Yeah.
It'll be over double. Approximately 3% inflation. Loss, correct.
Purchasing power loss,
yeah,
of the money. It's exactly why I like gold and silver.
You know, gold peaked out at around $1,950, $2,000 an ounce in what, 2008, 2009, financial crisis?
Mm-hmm.
And here we are 10, 12 years later, and it's back just above that level, paying me no dividends. And if I own the gold bars, I had to store them somewhere, lug those clunky little things around. The GLD, my good friends, is what I would buy. Jamie, not as keen on the GLD. But anyways, gold does look interesting, Jamie, and the U.S. dollar, according to the basket, the Dixie, looks pretty darn weak. And Jack, I'm glad you pointed that out to me this week. I want to thank you for that. Because the Canadian dollar U.S. cross, they call it, not as dramatic, but the Dixie broke 100. Jamie, I'm going to give you about 60 seconds to talk about the direction for the U.S. dollar. How long it's going to take to get to zero, in other words, according to you.
Well, I think the bigger issue is even Ray Dalio, one of the top money managers out of Wall Street 3 years ago, said, because his clients were complaining that he was buying gold assets, and he said, if you don't own gold, you don't know history or economics,
yeah,
right? And what he was talking about was the paradigm shift that is afoot, and that paradigm shift is the move to displace the U.S. dollar as the currency reserve out of the world, especially with the BRICS plus 40 other nations that are coming on board with returning gold to do what it has done for 4,000 years. The most trustable form of money. The problem is that the world has lost trust on the dollar. And because of that, they are wanting to use gold again. So whether we like it or not, it's inevitable now that gold is returning to the monetary system.
Jamie, wow. I'm getting the rap from Jack because he's getting the rap from the producer here. We're going to take a quick break. Jamie Carrasco,
okay.
One of our portfolio managers at Canaccord, good friend of mine. I love this guy. It was so much fun. He's very handsome too. Quick break, get back to Hi-Fi Radio. Stay tuned.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Y yo traigo pa' ti. Puerto Rico me llama. La miro porque será.
There it is. You hear the holla holla?
That's
the hook. Holla holla. Richie Ray, Bobby Cruz from Puerto Rico. Something from my friend Jamie Carrasco. He's from Chile, Latin America. That is why I believe, and he will verify, that is why Jamie likes gold so much, because he came from a jurisdiction that had no discipline, or has no discipline
monetary
when it comes to currency.
Discipline.
Monetary discipline, they lack it. They totally lack monetary discipline. They just print, 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 and devalue. I had a photocopy of a Zimbabwe, I think it was $1 million note, that wouldn't buy a bed of bread, a loaf of bread. Zimbabwe currency, I think one of the most annihilated currencies in history, if I recall, Jamie. Is crypto, Jamie, I got to ask you, you got to help me out here. Honestly, you do. And this could be a very bearish statement I'm going to make to you, but my son is back from university, working very, very hard, super hard at a local golf course. The poor guy's getting up at 5:30 in the morning, rain or shine, and lots of rain this summer in the morning. And he has to get out there and take care of the greens and do what you have to do to maintain a golf course just around the corner. The two boys work together. It's very, very cute. But I have to confess, he's taking his hard-earned money, and he's getting online and getting back in the crypto market. And his latest thing was, I said, Elliot, how are these crypto companies going to do anything? What is going to make them go up other than demand? People believing they should go up because they don't produce anything like gold. They just sit there. And in fact, crypto's worse than gold because crypto, you have to keep the electricity running. You have to do what's called mine it because it's a big, long, live algorithm, right? It's a big mathematical formula that must keep running. And every time a transaction goes on, that has to be verified. So the algo must run. And then there's what's called miners. So people who rent apartments and steal the electricity and let their computers just run through these algos, connected to the network. But then he spoke about something called, well, no, Dad, it's just the gas. It's the gasoline. I said, what? Well, that's what they call it. That's what they call it to keep it going. It's a gasoline.
It's a hash rate.
Well, no, they call it gasoline. No,
it's called the hash rate.
He says it's called the gas. Have you heard that phrase? Gasoline. I don't know, but kids.
But he means it's a hash rate.
But you know what I did? I ran to the office and came back the next day with my compounding table. I said, enough of the gas hash rate nonsense. $1,000 a month for 10 years is $167,000. $1,000 a month for 23 years at 9%, which is doable, is $1 million. $1,000 a month for $1,000 a month for 40 years at 9% is $4.7 million. Can you do it? Yes. Do you want $4.7 million? Yes. Discipline. Do it.
I was going to say started. Discipline. It's huge.
Just get started. I can't stress this enough. But honestly, I can't stress this stuff enough.
You got to remember, look at what's happened with Bitcoin in the last year. I mean, it's probably up 70%. You're talking about the NASDAQ being up.
And all the American banks are getting it. The ETFs have been passed. The SEC has cleared the way. Yeah. And the technology won't be stopped. I think we're talking about the internet, circa 95.
Meta's up 160% year to date. General Electric is up 70%.
I'm just talking about the broad indexes. So you look at the NASDAQ being up 30 plus, and then you say, you know what, Bitcoin's up, I don't know, 70, 80% at least off of its bottom. So it's had a very quiet bull market. You know, people aren't talking about it in the office, well, other than Jamie. But
and don't forget that it's gone from zero to 69,000.
Incredible. If you're going to buy one, that is the one to buy, without question. But even
we're not advocating for that.
Don't buy any. You don't need it. What do you say to clients about gold? You know, because if you're going to buy, I believe Jamie, if you want some gold, buy gold. And the way I'd play gold, I wouldn't buy bars, but you can come down to the Scotia Plaza. You go down a big round desk, and that's where they will actually physically sell you bars. That's basically the only place to do it, Toronto, the right place. Go to Scotia, and they will sell you bars of gold. But forget it. I just buy the GLD. It is an ETF. It is backed by gold currency. State Street runs it. It is audited. I don't question it. There's also one in Ottawa. They have...
There's the Sprott Gold Fund.
The Sprott Gold Fund. And I prefer the GLD because better liquidity and it's lower fee. Because to store those gold bars, there is a fee. So you got to pay the divvy. It doesn't pay you. You pay it. Right, Jamie?
True. But there's going to come a point, like it has happened to me, that you have enough physical gold and physical silver, like cash, and now you want to invest in the sector. And that's where the opportunity lies in the future.
I can tell you a cool story about acid. This actually I found a good friend of mine is from South Africa. And coming out of South Africa, I believe he wanted to avoid the draft. So he came to Canada. And you're not allowed to bring, I'm not sure what currency he was in, but not the Rand.
It's the Rand.
It's the Rand. You're not allowed to bring currency out of the country. For whatever reason, they don't want you to take currency out of the country. So to take wealth out of the country, he got some diamonds, wholesale cut diamonds, and he brought them to Canada. And then now he wants to unleash the wealth for the diamonds. So he came down to Yonge and Dundas and went to all those diamond dealers, knock on these little windows and say, I got some diamonds. Would you like to bid for them? Everyone shut the door on him because they weren't sure stolen, what they're worth. And his father was a diamond dealer, so he actually had a good idea of what they were worth. But it was a lot of effort for him to sell those diamonds. And finally, he came across another gentleman who I think was also from South Africa, and the diamond trade went down. He traded his diamonds, got his cash. But it wasn't so easy to do. Same with gold bars. Probably easier. But, Jamie, you got your gold bars. You want to sell those, you got to physically bring them down to Scotia Bank and sell them. The GLD, you can call me up. Bang, it's sold.
The bank is out of the business. You can't do that anymore there.
Are they out of the business? Oh, thank you. They don't do that anymore?
Not for 5 years.
Oh, really? So see what I know about gold? Not much. I know, don't buy gold stocks. They're awful. Gold stocks are awful investments.
But you can go to the bullion dealers. There's tons in Toronto to get that done. You can ship it out to them in FedEx if you want to, and you're getting spot, not the premium.
Yeah, so you're not talking Russell now. You're not going to Russell to get gold.
No. Toronto Gold Bullion is a good bullion. You know, they're buying back bullion. You got Smith, whatever, in the U.S. There's tons. There's a lot of gold bullion dealers out there that will take your gold. But right now, the bigger issue is physical supply with global demand as it's coming in, because the physical inventories are going down and being drained. Same thing with silver. You know, the Silver Institute reports on how bad of a silver supply were.
Sorry, do central banks sit on silver as well? And I don't got much time back. I have no time, but I want to ask you a question, Jamie. Who holds the bulk of the world's gold? And what has happened to the gold inventory overall? Like, every ounce that's been mined.
China hasn't.
What percent do you think? And then how much does the States have?
I would imagine that the total gold supply within all central banks and available at 60,000 tons.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would say that about 25,000 tons of that is sitting in China.
Wow.
And 9,000 in the U.S. Now, we know what went to China since 08 because they were smelting it into kilo bars. So through the Perth Mint, I discovered through my quarry that it was physical Western pound bars being re-smelted into kilo going into China. So we know that 22,000 have left to China. They enter through the Shanghai Exchange, right? So when you look at physical inventories, it's mostly in the BRICS plus 40 nations that are looking to go into some kind of a gold standard. So in essence, they've been taking it away because they're planning on using it as money again. And that is the opportunity.
Well, gold is flirting with an all-time high. Jamie Carrasco.
And one last important thing.
Yep.
Gold must be produced. Canada doesn't have any. How do you think we're going to get it if we want to trade with the world in a gold system? We're going to have to produce it first to be able to shop with the world if we go back to a monetary system, a hard-based money system.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to, if I look at a 20-year or 30-year chart of J.P. Morgan, Royal Bank, even the railways, of course, I love the rails. 20, 30-year charts, lower left, upper right, stocks all made money. When I look at 20-year charts of gold miners, not good. Like really not good. Sorry?
Because ever since Nixon, and I wouldn't argue with you, because ever since Nixon and Peg 50 years ago, the last 30 years, we've been in this debt bubble of fiat system where we're building this debt. So what is the net return of these markets? Negative of that debt, right? It's not that great.
No.
Because we have trillions of debt.
Jamie, I want to wish you a great weekend. I want to thank you for your time. Jamie Carrasco.
Likewise, my brother.
Portfolio manager. Great guy. Good friend of mine at Canaccord. Jack Hartle, producer of the show. Always a treat. And indeed, $1,000 a month, my good friends. $1,000 a month. Start at 25. 9% return. S&P 500 has done about 11. It is doable. You got to start and you got to stick with it. After 40 years, you got 4.7. How long to get to a million? About 24 years. You can do it. Because you know something? Cliche? Time flies. Just ask this whole fart. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio. For the love of money. Join us again next week. The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.